Welcome, everybody. This is Dr. Lori Moore, and I'm very, very blessed and happy today to have an old friend who was my hypnotherapy teacher at Twin Lakes College for an entire year. And I learned and absorbed very much from this wonderful woman, Rua Bull, who is a licensed therapist and now has become a very, very wise and gifted aromatherapist who travels the world of spiritual to practical. And I think what I love most about Rua is that she's so able to communicate and interact with people from all kinds of walks of life, because she really looks at the heart of a person and beyond the language and the style and the way of expressing or believing or being in religion or politics. She really welcomes the heart of people, so she can communicate with people from so many different backgrounds and ways. So welcome, Rua. Very happy you're here.
Lori, thank you. And listen, one thing I just wanted to say is I'm actually not a licensed therapist. I work as a spiritual director. So I haven't been a therapist for a long time. I love that work, but now primarily focus on working as a spiritual director with people specifically around their spiritual journeys.
Thank you for clarifying that, because way back when I knew you, you were one of the most successful therapists in town, and I do see that your work has deepened tremendously, and the years of being a therapist, I'm sure, gave you a lot of background to inform what you do now, but you've moved into this whole spiritual arena where you help people move in that way. So thank you for letting us know.
Sure.
The first question that I ask a lot and felt was fitting to ask you is a very broad and general question, and the question is, what is love?
Mm. You know, Lori, when I ask myself that question, what I do is I ask for an image, and the image I see is this eternal moment of the unmanifest manifesting, this incredible godding, creating moment in which out of no-thingness, everything arises, interconnected, intimate, one, and complex. And for me, I think of love as that vibration that emerges out of the unmanifest into the incredible, exquisite, cosmic dance of creation. So how's that for a broad answer?
What a beautiful understanding, and I relate to that very deeply, because when I close my eyes, I often notice that myself and all other selves are really being born of a light that I see in this moment. And it's like you said, the light's coming into form, and I was actually talking to my cat this morning about the same topic, because he was saying how we pick viewpoints and it's like we flavor reality with our viewpoints and our actions and our feelings. But reality is just happening. There's birth after birth after birth every second.
Yes.
And when we really clue deep, deep inside, we're really not the form that comes to express it for a moment. That's more like a vessel, where our personality and body is more like a vessel for this huge one creation that's just pulsing and beating, and then we take on form. And so once we're in form, challenges can come.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, in the old days when you were a therapist and now as a spiritual guide and director and teacher, part of your work is to assist people when challenges show up in their experience.
And how they can understand in their own way, in their own language, where is love in this? Excuse me, where is God in this? What is being taught in this? But so you can respond to whatever comes your way with, all right, God is here too. God is here too. God is here too. However that's happening. So I love being able to talk to somebody who has a similar sense of it, because I mean, I sometimes come down to the absolute mundane. You know, it's me looking into my dog's eyes and you looking into your cat's eyes and having that sense of real communion across species, knowing that we're one. And there's also this huge vastness. So I love how it's this incredible beyond capacity to understand place, and it's also these little mundane moments of just beautiful recognition of one another. And I love it that it goes the whole gamut.
Yeah. And so when you're speaking of these truths, what I'm experiencing is that you're vibrating your being in this very deep reservoir of spaciousness, and it's a peacefulness. And so the truths of which you talk are really not concepts or philosophy. They seem to be birthing out of you in knowing and understanding. And what is it that allows some people to start to embark on going inside, where that kind of a shift of knowing occurs, and some people would prefer maybe to stay more on the surface of themselves, where what we're saying could be heard as concepts. What is it in you that has taken you in your life deeper and deeper and deeper? Because truly, when I knew you years ago, you had a reservoir of depth. But now, just hearing your voice today, that spaciousness and depth has grown tremendously. And something called you there. Something made your choice to be about that rather than some building on top of it. And can you share about that?
I think, gosh, great question. You know, Lori, I think when we consent to the spiritual journey, and I, you know, I believe in multiple lifetimes, and it might take a while for souls to manifest in such a way where they're called to a spiritual lifetime. I don't know about that, but I just know that there's something that's been inside of me my whole life that is just called me to that. You know, the poetry that I loved, the art that I loved, the music that I love touches something inside that has always asked me to find a connection. And I remember when I turned 50, I woke up, and that was 9 years ago, I woke up that morning with this prayer in my heart, and the prayer was, Great Spirit, remove from me whatever gets in the way of my being who I came here to be so that I can do what I came here to do. And that was kind of a radical prayer, kind of scary. I didn't know what that was going to mean, but I felt it inside of me, and I just said, yeah, that's it. That's it. Help me live in such a way so that that prayer is guiding me to wherever you lead me to. And as you know something of my journey, one of the things that happened is that I was led to this path that I'm on that was completely unexpected. And in fact, I even resisted it for a while, struggled with it. But something inside of me just kept saying, show me the truth. Show me the truth. Help me become more loving. I know Meister Eckhart said that there's a God seed within each one of us. And I don't know why people like us are graced with this, Lori. I don't understand it. But I think that for some of us, tending to that God seed, responding to its invitation and to the spiritual journey is something that compels us. And I know it's compelled you.
Well, I can relate so deeply to your spontaneous prayer from your heart and soul that took you, because there was one time where the spontaneous prayer that came from me was, please just take me back to the Garden of Eden, take me back. And for many years following that, these states of this unconditional awakening, peace, joy, love, oneness would take me over and over and over. But then there came this attachment, and it was like I was proud of it, or I thought I was someone because of it.
Sure.
And the next prayer that came was, please remove all false identities. And I remember praying that, and I was given a choice from universe, from source, from God, that very fast something can happen, or you can go through it in a human way. But what was interesting was I was given a choice, but I didn't have a choice to respond in a preference. It would have been very nice to just go through it. I was given a choice, but I wasn't given the option by something way grander than what I can explain, something mysterious, something I would call grace, a gift, to say, oh, I'll go through it quickly. And so then for 4 years, hell came, and it just came from every single direction, like ripping all the identities until it became obvious that the path for me, for this life form, was more this clearing, 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 until it was just kind of neutral, until each moment became like, okay, I can say this, I can do this, but I cannot fall for the idea that I am what I say or I do or I am titled as or I wear or I talk. It's that's more like a microphone. How do you relate to
well,
that?
When I'm hearing you talk about it, I think about how in the Christian story, and all the traditions have this kind of story, the Christian will talk about how there's a point in time on the journey when we go through a dark night, where before that, there's all of this delightful things that are given to us. And then after that, there's a time of stripping away. I think about how in the Christian scripture, Jesus went to the top of the mountain. There was this transfiguration where he was revealed in his light body, and the ones who were with him could see who he was throughout all space and time. And as soon as he came down off the mountain, Lori, he went off into the desert for 40 days and nights of fasting and temptation. And all the temptations of the false self, the ego, came towards him. So to me, you're describing almost like an archetypal part of the journey that a lot of folks don't understand. And I really just want to tell you, I hear you, and my gosh, I want to validate that and the courage it takes to go through it. And I think what you said is exactly right, that there's this connection with the vastness that's there. And then in order to purify the spiritualized ego, which, you know, I've had a lot of people put me up on a pedestal and, oh, you're my guru, or, oh, you're my spiritual master. And Lori, I run away from that because I know what that's like. It's like, my gosh, as soon as somebody puts me on a pedestal, if I start believing that, I am walking away from God. It's like it is danger. It is danger. So I really appreciate what you're saying, that you were wanting to focus on the divine, even if that meant going through an extremely painful process. And I think that that's what happens, and I think it's a gift. But in the meantime, it feels like you're in hell. On the other side, I can go, oh, okay, I'm glad I went through that. It was really clearing. But I went through a process a few years ago where I was having a really difficult time. I lost some of the things that were going on in my life that I was really attached to, and my eating disorder was back, and I just was, oh, I was just like a crazy woman. And the image I had was I'd struggle and struggle and struggle, and I'd get my nose sort of out of the dirt, and then this ton of ash would just land on my head. And then I would struggle and struggle and struggle, and a ton of ash. And I finally, after about four times, I thought, I think I'm just supposed to sit here under the ash, which I did for a couple of years. So that's what I think about your story. I think, yep, this is part of it.
You know, what those years taught me was, just like you said, to sit under the ash. And when the ash stopped, the next test was, exactly what you brought up about the worshiping, because that started, oh, God told me to help Lori. You know, what am I supposed to say? I said, okay, well, God told me to help you. I mean, I would just start giving it back to everyone. But I have to say, honestly, that became very appealing to me. With my personality, I started to feel, oh, this feels very nice. You know, everybody loves me. Well, it's not real love, but it's a kind of love. What it really is what I finally understood was it's people going through an aspect of consciousness, and I ceased to make it relevant. But at the time, it became just another attachment, I call them. It's when I start to identify, you know. At first, I identified with those hell realms. I'm a failure. And, of course, in time, it was like, no, you're not a failure. This is part of consciousness. And just sit and open to it. And all of a sudden, oh, there's the love. There's the bliss that was also there in the good circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And so then come what seemed to be good circumstances. Oh, everybody loves my work and loves me. That seemed pretty good. But I could just feel, here you go again. You're going to get into the identity thing again. And as I started slipping there, it didn't feel so good anymore. It felt extremely confusing. And so then it was opening up, not identifying as the confusion, but just opening up to that and next, and it's a beautiful process as we start to find more and more that we really aren't any of these aspects of consciousness. We're something far deeper and purer that holds all of that, and that which is holding all that is holding us as persons,
mm-hmm,
as characters,
mm-hmm,
as personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's just this ongoing, sometimes I think, oh, okay, now I've got that dust off my feet, and now I can move on to the next step, and then, you know, I'm in this new place for a while, and then there's the next test, and so I think now at 59, I no longer say, oh, I'll never have to go through that again. It's just, you know, in this moment, this is where I am, and Lord, whatever happens, help me be present with you no matter what, you know? And for me, I think that's the journey.
Yeah.
Keep learning.
Yeah. And like you said, this journey takes us more and more into just the present now. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if there'll be a repeat of a cycle of something we thought changed or was solved.
Yeah.
It can come back up. So this series of interviews has been fascinating because we've talked to people whose influences more from a Hindu tradition, more from a Sufi tradition, more from a Divine Mother tradition. And it sounds like at this time, yours is more from a working closely with the master teacher, Jesus. And so are you Christian, or does it not matter? How do you define what you do, if that's even a relevant discussion for you?
Well, it's very relevant because it's been a very interesting and challenging process for me. I was brought up Catholic and left when I was 12 because I was just, you know, done with the stuff that I was taught, and was a spiritual eclectic for many, many years, particularly studying a lot of Native American tradition and gathering together in a way that really nurtured me, Lori, particularly Buddhism and Native American tradition. And in the mid-90s, when I would go in to do my shamanic work, Jesus would be there. And I was, I remember one time going into my sacred place to meet my higher self, and he was there, and I told him to go away, and he said no, and I said, I'm not a Christian. He said, I'm not either. I'm a Jew. Yeah, I mean, he was kind of a pain in the neck. And I did not want him because my concept of Christ and Christian were the folks I see in the media who I do not want to make them bad or wrong, but they are coming from a level of consciousness and understanding that I don't relate to at all. But then I started doing shamanic work, and he would be there in my healing work. I'd go into my medicine wheel, and he'd be in the north in the place of the teacher. So I finally found this Catholic woman who was very liberal. That her spiritual director was a Buddhist, but she was a Catholic spiritual director. And I just went in and I said, I need help because this guy keeps showing up and I can't get rid of him and I don't like him and I don't like Christianity. So we spent a couple of years really grappling with who is he to me? And Lori, I have had lifetimes as priests and monks and nuns. This is a deep part of my soul journey. And in this lifetime, as much as I have not wanted it, he is my teacher. And I've really grappled with calling myself a Christian because I associate the word Christian with people who are functioning at more, you know, mythic level consciousness. You know, my Christ is right, yours is wrong, and that's not where I live at all. But I would say that I'm, if I was going to put a name on it, I'd say I was a contemplative Catholic. The contemplative tradition, the mystical tradition, and then the social activist tradition in that particular path is where I keep being pulled to, kicking and screaming. My 91-year-old dad said to me once, "Honey, I think this is great, but I don't know if the Pope would think you were a Catholic." And I said, "Well, Daddy, I don't know if I think the Pope is Catholic." So I'm actually learning to get it out of my mouth because I almost feel like I have to be willing to say, I am called to this path. I am called to follow the mystics. And when I go inside and ask for an image of my spiritual journey, I'm out in the middle of this ocean. I'm walking on the water. The Christ is standing in front of me, holding my hands, and he just keeps saying, "Follow me." And I'm just looking into those beautiful brown eyes in that wonderful Jewish face, and I have no idea where we're going, but I know I'm connected to him, and I'm supposed to follow him into what Christians call the Father and what I experience as the unmanifest. So it's kind of interesting. I hang out with these wonderful old wild women, nuns and former nuns who are radical feminists who call God she, who have all these mystical experiences, who do Zen meditation. And I'm thinking, if I'd known these women 50 years ago, I wouldn't have had to leave Christianity. But I've kind of found my tribe. Half of the people that I sit with in spiritual direction are what's called spiritual eclectics. And they don't have one place where they deeply, where they're called. And, you know, I've had arguments with folks over the years about this. I remember, because I was an eclectic for years, and I remember being at a retreat house one time for a meditation retreat, and there was a guy there from some interfaith group, and they were putting together some big interfaith thing. And I said, "Well, what about inviting the people who are spiritual but not religious, who don't fit into a faith?" And he kind of exploded. You know, they just should, you know, make up their mind and cafeteria this. And I looked at him and I said, "Well, what are you supposed to do? Spin the bottle? And if it lands on Lutheran, you're a Lutheran?" You know, I mean, it's like, it's not something that you can just do in some casual way. And he was really taken aback and actually apologized to me later. And I was thinking, I think that there are, you know, it may be that you do at some point find somebody and go, "Ooh, this is it." But I know a lot of folks who are with a certain teacher for a time. I know other people who don't find any external teacher. You know, it's all an inner. And I'll tell you a secret, too. Now, it's not a secret because it's out. One of the things I love about Jesus is that he's dead. And he transmuted at the ascension into the Christ. So I don't now look for a spiritual master in physical form. Because for me, the master is this Christ energy. And so when I meet different people who I really like, they might manifest that energy in a particularly wonderful way given their temperament. But I see them as humans, and they contribute a certain thing to me. You know, like from Joan Chittister, she's this wonderful, passionate, lively, feminist, funny, wild woman nun. And then there's Thomas Keating, who's this tall, quiet, contemplative Trappist monk. and I learn from both of them, you know, and I love the Dalai Lama. And so it's, I think the relationship to a teacher is different for different people. And, you know, for me, even though I follow Christ, to be honest with you, I don't fit into any churches. I go to retreat houses. I love the Carmelites. I love the Benedictines. I'll go off and do an 8-day silent retreat at Mercy Center in Burlingame. But I've tried to go to different churches, and I don't fit in anywhere. And I wish I did.
I hear that. I understand.
You know?
Yeah. You know, I think it's actually part of the journey, too, the journey through the different aspects of consciousness to go through that. In a way, nobody fits in anywhere.
Yeah.
I remember I got invited to a ritual at a student's house, and I just went in resonance with the master love, with
mm-hmm.
the unconditional love, with the oneness I get taken to. And I remember somebody there said, oh, you fit in just perfectly here. This is like your home. And in that moment, I was experiencing my soul, like, fitting in so perfectly because I was there in love.
Yes.
And my body personality just laughing, hysterically
yes.
thinking, if you only knew, like, I so do not fit in here. I mean, of every place in the, anywhere I could be in the world, I do not. I mean, it was so not where I fit in every
well,
single.
Well, it sounds like because yeah. you were there with love, she experienced you there in resonance, bringing love, but you knew in terms of what did or didn't suit you, this wasn't a match at all. But you could still walk into it with love, and they felt that, and, oh, this is your place.
Yeah.
I understand that, Lori. Yeah.
Yeah, because for me it was so secondary. Like those
mm-hmm.
attachments to and the preference to the place feels like this, it smells like this. It's so arbitrary. It's like
yeah.
a lifetime of conditioning.
Yes.
And I found in so many, you know, having visited so many ashrams, takiyas, places of worship, I do feel I completely fit in on a soul level. As soon as I start being told, like, and I get told this in a lot of places, oh, you fit in here, you know, welcome home, this is your place, I get a feeling of discomfort as to what is the consciousness here expecting
yeah.
of the individual to fit into, because I don't know anything. And I'm in elemental discovery and inquiry of not knowing quite a lot of the time.
Yes.
And, even when we speak about it, I can feel that vibration, the consciousness that takes place in the tribe. And I worked so hard as I built the love climate thinking, oh, well, it won't happen here. And I finally realized it's human development. It did happen here. You know, I heard dogmas being spouted out on behalf of myself that I could not align with.
Wow.
and it was humbling because it was like, oh, this is about forgiveness. This is about just how we develop. This is about how we're all short-sighted. And this is about love, too. It's all about love.
And I think people are, you know, at different places and need different things, and that's fine. And I'm right with you that, you know, when I started letting people know in my environment that I follow Christ, I have some friends and colleagues who, they're not conservative because conservative people can't stand me, but they're more moderate. And the people I feel closest to are kind of the liberal ecumenical, you know, the Kamaldolese monks who sit with the Buddhist monks. And that's kind of, those are kind of my folks. But I had a lot of people say, oh, you're a Christian, you're one of us. And they start talking about this and that and, you know, hell and the crucifixion. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, I want to love these people. I know that they are my brothers and sisters. But we might even use the same words, but we understand them in a very different way. You know, oh, well, all Christians believe X, Y, or Z. And I'm sitting there thinking, I follow Christ, but, you know, I actually don't experience X, Y, and Z the way that you do. So I think I've been trying to grapple with how to be in relationship with this community where I am in alignment with an aspect of it, But a lot of other things that people say or believe or do or espouse, or, oh, you're one of us now and you want to, you know, be in the choir or whatever. And it's like, no, I'm not going to sing the song about washed in the blood of the Lamb and how Jesus died for our sins, because that is not my experience at all. And I'm too old to tell lies. You know?
It's an amazing world. What I think happens that you're talking about is how you, I even think it with the human species. I think I can look at a bus stop or a school or just take 15 humans, and I sometimes wonder, are you really all, you don't seem to even be of the same species. It's like when you're in any, you're a school, you're at a religion, you're at a spiritual event, you're at a team. But everyone's having a perception, and
yeah.
Everyone's perception is beautifully valid because it's their frame of reference for where they are to grow next,
yeah.
Or what they are to perceive, or their way of participating as an inspiration just by who they are.
Yes.
And then there's all this misperception because people will think, well, if I think this, someone else is thinking this, or Christian means this. I even remember back in the very early 80s, in the EST training.
Oh, yeah.
Where everyone had to stand up. I was in New York City, so there was, I think there were 500 people there. When you get it, stand up. And so when I got it, that all there is love, I stood up. And it was like 3 years later where I found out that everyone was standing up for a different reason.
Well, it's, you know, I remember years ago when I was learning to be a hypnotherapist, one of my favorite teachers said that one of the problems with people who are healers is that we tend to be really intuitive and we forget to be curious.
Mm.
And that was very helpful for me because it helped me remember that as you, and you just put it perfectly, 15 people can be saying, I get it, and I have to know that I can't assume that I know what they mean by that.
That's so, it's such a beautiful, humble, wonderful perspective of openness. I love that. I always ask when people share here that instead of agreeing or disagreeing with each other, they just listen and allow themselves to be moved in whatever way they're moved by the perfection of who's sharing. So it's wonderful that you have that perspective, that you can know that people are thinking differently and seeing and feeling and hearing differently. And so when people come to you as a spiritual guide, do people come and do one-on-one sessions with you? Do they come in to meet you in small groups? How do they come to benefit by your work if they want to be closer to you?
Well, it's spiritual. I did a three-year training at this place called Mercy Center in Burlingame in spiritual direction. So the title is spiritual director, and it's actually kind of a misnomer because it sounds like you're being very directive, and actually it's a much more contemplative listening and supportive process. I usually see people monthly. I do spiritual direction groups, but the reason, Lori, why you see people monthly rather than more often is that the focus in spiritual direction is supporting this person in their relationship with the divine. And if you see them more often, they tend to kind of make more of a connection with you. And my job is to help this person really explore what the divine is, how they relate to that, what are the practices that deepen that relationship. So probably about half the people I see are eclectics, and then about another quarter are very kind of liberal, contemplative Christians, and then I also have a pagan and a rabbi and Jewish lady who's pretty liberal, so kind of a mix from other traditions. One Sufi woman I worked with for a while. And so the work, whether one-on-one or in a group, is to really hold a space where that person is investigating their relationship with the divine, both in their life. You know, sometimes people will come in and I'm really having a hard time at work, or something is going on in my relationship, and where is, you know, Allah or Jesus or how can I bring this into my meditation practice? So sometimes it's about things going on in their life, but lots of times it's about you know, what do I think? What do I believe? What makes sense to me? And because I have a lot of background, I'll oftentimes give people things to think about or practices to experiment with, but I want to be really careful that I'm not telling this person what to believe, you know, because my goal is to help the person discover where the divine is for them.
And
that's what I really love, because I, Lori, I've been in such a privileged position, because I've been sitting with individuals and groups since 1977 in different kinds of ways. And the great gift that I've gotten from that is just hearing, by this point in time, probably thousands of stories. And, you know, I think about, like, every person to me is like a different flower, you know, and there are lilies of the valley, and there's bougainvillea, and there's lavender, and there's, you know, just the roses. And so I'm, what brings me the most joy is to support somebody in discovering who they are as a unique expression of the divine.
That's something that so many people really need right now, or
yes,
wish for, yearn for. How do people find you? Tell them your website and your phone number.
Oh, well, I'm happy to do that. And I have to tell you, I do not have a website, although, let me tell you, they can get me at my email, which is ruahb, R-U-A-H-B, at sbcglobal.net. They can also call me at my office number, 707-762-3404. I'm in Petaluma. And I do, in fact, I work with people all over the country. I work by phone as well as in person. And I, again, I love working with folks who are explorers, who are feeling, oftentimes people come in a couple different ways. The God concept that they've been present with for many years is no longer fitting, and something else is trying to be birthed, and it's scary, and they want support.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes people start having experiences that they don't, they can't understand, and that might be kind of overwhelming for them, or they want to develop a contemplative practice. I just, Lori, I can't believe I do this work and I get paid for it.
I'm so happy you do. It's really, really wonderful to know that and hear that. Rua, you have some books in your background. Are you interested in bringing those up, or is that work of the past for you?
Well, I can let people know about it, and that's an astute question. I was involved in doing subtle aromatherapy for quite a few years, because the aromatherapy oils have been very much a part of my own spiritual journey and opening, kind of moving me from the psychological and the hypnotherapy into more the energetic realms and then the spiritual realms. But I've actually, in the last 5 or so years, been turning that work over to other people. But the three books that I co-wrote with my good friend Joni Keim are considered kind of classics in the subtle aromatherapy field. So if folks are interested, they can go on, Amazon has them. There's one called Aromatherapy and Subtle Energy Techniques that teaches folks about some of the oils, including a lot of the rare oils, how they relate to the chakra system and the energy bodies, and then how to incorporate them into some simple energy techniques. And then there's another one called Aromatherapy Anointing Oils. And Joni and I both are kind of a ritual queens, and so we had great fun doing that book on the deeper spiritual teachings of about 50 oils, and then encouraging people in ways to create personal ceremonies and blessings to celebrate and mark different things. And then the last one we did a couple years ago was called Daily Aromatherapy, where people would work with a different oil every week, and it would take them through a process related to the season that was physical, emotional, cognitive, energetic, and spiritual. And the oils and the Devic kingdom are still very close to me when I go into meditation and do my shamanic work. I frequently will have plant spirits with me and animal spirits as well. But I've been noticing that it's become more of a I don't know if you have you ever found that, Lori, for you, that there's a tool that really is kind of like the main thing for a while, and then it kind of steps back a little bit, and you still pull on it occasionally, but it's not the main thing that you move through your life with.
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually thinking of this delightful spirit I met. I was giving a satsang up at Mount Shasta, and she owned and created this beautifully, artistically designed venue, and her name is Grael Corsini, and she shared a story about how most of her life, when she would run into people that she would have this overwhelming love for, and a series of past lives with them would flash before her. And at a certain point in her life, that ceased to happen, and she was able to just feel an overwhelming love for them just because. And she no longer needed to resource the information from the past. It wasn't really a conscious decision. It was really what you've been referring to throughout this conversation, which is to surrender to the path that is taking us.
Yes.
And so along that path, I've had a lot of experiences with Mary Magdalene.
Oh, she's wonderful.
Yeah, and not, I mean, really just how I've had them, not as any book has said, although there's been more modern books that I feel, yes, that's her. That's who's come to me, has come to that person. And through that person's, it's come through their understanding. And through me, it's come through mine. But I've experienced her so often coming into my work, especially in Hawaii, just this beautiful, passionate, loving energy that takes everything into the oneness with huge heart passion.
Wow.
And I just wanted to open the conversation into her and ask about your relationship with her, and or if you have anything to say about her.
She, I have not had as much of a personal connection with her. I Mother Mary, I actually have had a strong energetic connection with. So I haven't had kind of personal relationship that you describe, but the way that I think of her when I think of, you know, the women in that period of time is I just see her, I mean, you know, she's always painted in red as just this incredible, passionate, loving, powerful woman. And for women who follow the Christ path, and obviously for, you know, for somebody like you who isn't specifically on that path, but for those of us who follow the Christ path, I know in the traditional teachings, women were just taught to be very submissive. And for me, Mary Magdalene just completely blows that out of the water and says, no, there is a way to be present with this energy that is joyful and blissful and passionate. And I see her as like a dancer, you know, like with a tambourine.
Yes.
and really in tune with the erotic energy.
Yes.
That a lot of Christianity has not dealt with well. So I think she's a very important woman today, as a lot of us, whether we're Christian or not, many of us had Christian upbringings, and the injury around women and the eros that women carries and the Christ energy's relationship to that eros, I think Mary Magdalene is an incredibly important being for us to be in relationship with, because she heals a lot of what was injured.
Yes. I have gone through periods where my whole inner self is just like this burning, it's burning everything I am up in love and erotic passion, and it's between myself and God, but it's not even between myself and God because there's no between. It's
Yeah, Meister Eckhart said that, Lori, and you just put it perfectly. You are a modern mystic. He said, between you and God, there is no between. You
yes,
it, girl. Oh.
So I'm just loving talking to you, and I want to know if there's anything else you were hoping to share or discuss that hasn't been brought up.
Gosh, I don't think so. This is just so fun. I mean, you know, we could talk for hours. I'm just kind of looking over some of the. I think we already talked about what it's like to know people from diverse paths, because I know that, you and I both do that and really kind of learn a lot from that. I know before we end, if with your permission, there's actually a little prayer that I wanted to say that I say every day, because one of the things that you'd asked is what is my way of following Christ, and I guess maybe that would be something I'd like to just spend a moment to talk about, Lori. That when I was a kid, I was not taught, because you know they were teaching us the Christianity appropriate for 8-year-olds. I wasn't taught that the Christ path, like all the other paths, is a path of transformation, and that the invitation on this path is languaged in what St. Paul said when he said, now it's no longer I that live, but Christ who lives in me. And I think that the other paths, you know, in Buddhism, people will be talking about in Buddha nature, and in Hinduism, you know, that Atman that is just, Atman is Brahman, you know, that I think all of them speak about in this way in which the false self is unraveled and the true self, which is an intimate communion with what Christians call Christ and other traditions call by other names, is able to just shine forth. And so the practices I do centering prayer twice a day, which is a wonderful contemplative prayer practice. The other things that I do, for me, it's all about that prayer that, you know, I mentioned earlier, just remove from me everything that is false. Remove from me everything that gets in the way of my being an instrument of the divine. And so I wanted to share that, and then I wanted to ask you, because I think you had said you're on the path of the Divine Mother, and I was really curious, Lori, what is that for you, and how does that get expressed in your life?
Thanks for asking. What I feel very deeply is throughout the, you know, deep mergings with different teachers and the being called by Mary Magdalene and then being called by, I just call her my Hindu teacher. I don't know if I'll ever meet her in the physical, but somebody who works with me a lot on the inner. That holding it all, I do feel is the divine feminine and masculine as one, but I feel my particular propensity this lifetime or attraction or how I go about it without ever planning has something deeply to do with bringing in or being a vessel for the new waves, which probably aren't new at all, probably were very prevalent at many times in the history of Earth. I doubt we really know the whole history of humankind on Earth.
I agree.
Yeah. So I feel that these waves that I'm absolutely sure from a feeling basis, from a seeing basis, that everything is in waves. It just is, and the scientists will say it, as will the mystics.
Mm-hmm.
But I know it. I see it. I feel it. And I think of that as the Divine Mother force, as this loving, beautiful force that's very willing at this time to erase all of the old conditionings, all of the old no longer needed thought forms that aren't serving. The tribe is everyone, and that this can be done through the Divine Father, but for some reason through me, my experience comes in this very... it feels like feminine. It's powerful. It's strong.
Mm-hmm.
It's accepting. It's loving, and it's very determined to create new ways of existence at this time on the planet. It's not me. It's not my plans. It's where I end up as I surrender.
That makes total sense to me, and you know, especially as I think about the wonderful prayer, "Make me your instrument," that there would be a certain, as much as we can appreciate that the divine is infinite and has infinite facets, it sounds as though the particular vibration, the particular facet of this infinite divine that I almost want to say has chosen you.
That's how it feels. I don't feel it was a decision. It just was. And so I can sit with the Sufis, and yes, in that moment I'm a Sufi.
Mm-hmm.
I can sit with the Jews, and I'm Jewish because I was born half Jewish. And I can sit with the Christians and be Christian, and the Muslims and be Muslim, and the Hindus and be Hindus. And I love the Mayan culture, and I love the Hawaiian culture, you know, because at the basis of all of it is this deep, deep love. This
yes.
deep, deep, and it's not, it's neutral love. It's invisible. It's transparent. It's, I can put my hand through it. It's not dependent on someone has to be something to me or I have to do something in some way. It just
yes.
is.
There's a wonderful image that a friend told me about in terms of the different paths where she held out her hand and spread the fingers. And she said, you know, if my fingers are spread and I look at the outermost points of the five fingers, those are like the exoteric practitioners of the different traditions, the people who are really grounded in the forms and the theology and the knowing and the practices, and they can be fairly far apart from one another. But then she said, when you receive the call to the inner journey, some people call it the mystical journey, or it's initiated by mystical experiences, or the contemplative journey, you start moving down the finger towards the palm of the hand. And she said that the contemplatives in the different traditions, and I would also include people like you who are the contemplatives who don't fit into any particular tradition, they're actually fairly close together because they're down here at the palm, and we're all knowing that we're, you know, the proverbial fingers pointing at the moon, that I might use the Christ language and somebody else might use the Sufi language and somebody else uses the Buddhist language, and we're humans using this imperfect language
to
point to this extraordinary mystery of love.
Yes, this mystery, this extraordinary mystery, yes.
And it sounds like that's where you live, so you can go and be with, you know, and somebody like me, to my surprise, has been called into a particular tradition, and I'm not quite sure why, but here I am.
And I feel that you're being called there is for everyone. There's a need for you to be there for all those that will be touched, and there's a need for you to be there for your own expansion of yourself, because you had some resistance to that, so now you're in peace and love about it, and there's some need for you to be there because evolution is evolving and you're part of it.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Wonder. Lori, we need to end in a few moments. Is that so?
Yes, but if there's, we have time for whatever else you want to bring up.
Could I?
Go for it. Yes.
Do this prayer. This is a prayer. I've changed it a little bit. It's the prayer, and you'll understand why when I start, but it's the prayer that's said by Mother Teresa's sisters every morning, and this to me is the heart of the paths. It's the heart of the path that I'm on.
Yes.
Mother, Father, God, Great Spirit, Christed One, you of so many different names, and that which cannot be named, help me to spread your fragrance wherever I am. Fill my heart with your spirit and your life. Penetrate my being and take such hold of me that my life becomes a radiation, a vibration of your own life of love. Give your light through me and remain in me in such a way that every soul I come in contact with can feel your loving presence in me. May people not see me, but rather see and feel you through me. Remain in me so that I might shine with your life, and may others be illuminated by that loving light. Place on my lips your greatest praise. Illuminate others around me. May I preach you, Spirit, with actions more than with words, and with the example of my actions, and with the visible light of the love that comes from you to my heart. Amen. Aho.
Thank you so much. Thank you for cleansing and bringing us such warmth with that beautiful, beautiful prayer about God, about Goddess, about may we dissolve into being servants for and of that divine mystery beyond any words I could even use. I think that's a beautiful place to just bring this to silence. And so we will end here. And thank you so much again, Rua Bol. It has been delightful to spend this time with you.
And Lori, my gosh, what a pleasure, what a treasure to reconnect with you. And I just wanted to just bless you and tell you how much I admire and appreciate your journey and all the ways that you are touching people. So thank you for being who you are, my friend.
Thank you, my dear. It is very mutual. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.